morning. We're going to call this meeting to order. Welcome all of you who are with us. Let's first call the roll and determine a quorum.
Estella Hernandez. Alicia Williams-Bradley. Kurt Hollenbach.
Here.
Bill Flanagan. Brian Bobeck.
Here.
Jennifer Munnies.
Here.
Superintendent Hollister.
Here. All right. And do we have a quorum? Did we comply with the Open Meetings Act? All right. Very good. Guests who are with us and honorable board members, would you please join me in a pledge of allegiance as well as a salute to the Oklahoma flag, followed by a moment of silence, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I salute the flag of the state of Oklahoma. Its symbols of peace unite all people. Thank you. You may be seated. Well, it's good to see everyone. Thank you so much for all of our guests who have joined us as well and honorable board members. It's great to see you here in February on this really chilly day, but I understand it's going to be absolutely lovely by the end of the day. So appreciate you being here. And we will have, I believe, Carlisha Williams-Bradley joining us in just a few moments. For now, let's begin with a few announcements and some recognition. We are delighted to have with us some special people that are in the audience, and we're going to take a moment in just a second to introduce them to you as well. We're going to start, though, with recognition of someone who has been serving in the State Department of Education for a very, very long time. 40 years of service, being recognized by Janet Felton, a financial specialist in the Special Education Department. And Janet is with us today. Glad you're here. Thank you. And Janet, if you would like to come on up to the podium. The podium is yours after 40 years. So we want to just share with everyone that may not be aware, Janet began her work at the State Department of Education right out of college in 1980 as a temp in HR. And after that temporary position ended, she served as a permanent employee in teacher certification for 5 years. Janet then moved to her current position as a financial specialist in the Special Education Department, and she has worked under 5 state superintendents, which I think now Marty was here just a few weeks back, and I think that he even says 6. So that's pretty, there's only been 14 in the history of our state. So you've seen a lot of history then here at the department. So you've seen a lot of changes, including moving from paper to digital, which I'm sure is that you've got all kinds of stories about that move, too. But I want to just applaud you for your service to the state and the population that you serve with our special education students and their families, and ensuring that funds are being utilized to best serve students is really quite remarkable and one that we know gives you great joy.
Thank you.
Do you have any words?
No, not really. I'm just thankful and just happy to be here.
Well, we want to give you a certificate from also the governor and a pen for 40 years. Okay. And so I'll let you open that in just a moment. I'm going to set it right here and we'll take a picture.
Okay.
All right. I'll let you hold that. Congratulations.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, also, as is our tradition, in the Department of Education, we have really great people that we want to celebrate, and our Employee of the Month is also with us, Robin Glensman. She is the Director of Gifted and Talented Services and Advanced Placement Coursework in the department. Robin, would you come also to the podium? And I know you've got some team here cheering you on today. Robin started working at the State Department of Education in 2015 as the Director of Elementary Mathematics. She was promoted to her position as the Director of Gifted and Talented and AP in 2018. And her nominator said this about you, Robin. You are so helpful and kind and a pleasure to be around. You always greet people with a smile, and you have some way of making them laugh at some point in the conversation. You are a bright spot in the office. But we also know that you have done so much to help close the gap when we think about equity around the state and ensuring that our gifted and talented children that are identified are reflecting those children that we see walking our halls in a variety of different socioeconomic backgrounds, race, ethnicity backgrounds, and that you are making sure that our schools are nominating or identifying those who are gifted and talented of all of the populations we serve. So I appreciate that work.
Thank you.
And also, I want to give you okay. Now, in December, board members, we had a great, great thing happen for Oklahoma. And I've talked with you about this before, but just so you know, in December, Oklahoma's only National Milk and Educator Award winner for 2019 is with us today. And her name is Brooke Lee. We shared a little bit about Brooke before. Brooke and her family are with us today. And Brooke, would you stand so that we can see you and tell us who you brought with you today?
So I brought both of my boys. This is Hudson and Hayden. And then I brought my mother and my grandparents. I brought my principal and our superintendent. And then I brought my father and my stepmother.
Wonderful. All right. Okay. So Brooke is an eighth grade English teacher at Will Rogers High School. Will Roger
Junior
High. It is written here, and I knew that. So I apologize for messing that up. And one of the things that the teachers talked about is how much you collaborate and what an amazing collaborator you are. So for those who are not familiar with the Milken Educator Awards, they are considered the Oscars of teaching, and it's sponsored by the Milken Family Foundation. And I would like to show you a little clip on the screens of Brooke of receiving this prestigious award. Go ahead here and roll, and if you would do me a favor and go to the podium as well.
Award goes to, of the greatest educator in the nation, come
win, Brooke Lee. To all of my students, thank you so much. You were the reason to be doing this.
I'm just honored to have won such an amazing, prestigious award. I am so grateful for this opportunity to represent my school, to showcase my kids. This is why educators do this. It's all about the kids.
Milken National Educator Award. Now I'm a part of this amazing elite team, and opportunities are coming my way.
Congratulations. You
sure
deserve it.
Thank you.
You deserve every bit of it.
Thank you.
Yay! So we would love to hear a few words you might have to say.
Sure. Thank you so much. First, I wanted to say thank you, Superintendent Hoffmeister and board members, for having us here today, myself and my group that I bring with me. I would like to also take this time to thank all of you for your continued support for education, your support for educators, and most importantly, all of the hard work and the time that you put in for our kids here in Oklahoma. Mr. Frazier, I wanted to thank you for the vision you've had for our school. It's been great, and I'm on board with that, and I just thank you for all of your support. The two-hour drive here shows how supportive you are. Okay, Mr. Young, I want to thank you for your continual support. You have completely built my confidence as a teacher. You believed in me when I've doubted myself. You've given me opportunities to grow in our building and trusted me with important things in our building. You gave me the push I needed to go back to school and start earning my master's for administration. You saw things in me that I hadn't noticed in myself yet. And while sometimes over the last year I may have been frustrated about that extra push, with all the homework, I'm so thankful that you pushed me to do that. And I know how humble you are, so you're probably sitting here thinking, this really isn't a big deal, but it is truly life-changing for me, so thank you. My family, I could not do any of what I do without my family. Whether it's helping me paint 3 different classrooms, hanging up stuff and dealing with my OCD of everything having to be perfect, dealing with my stubbornness, helping me make a cool game for the greatest, biggest day of my teaching career. Watching the boys so I can get homework done or just get my lessons done. Watching the boys while I have school and they don't. Taking them to appointments for me so I don't have to miss school. Listening to me whine when I have a rough day or I'm overwhelmed. Coming to stay with me and take care of me while I had surgery and helping out with the boys. Leading by example and showing me what grit is and how to have an incredible work ethic. And for your unconditional love. Thank you for always lifting me up with kind words and being my biggest fans. It takes a village, and I have the best village a girl could ask for. So I want to talk about my students I have this year. I have a special relationship with these kiddos because I've had them twice now. So I had them in 6th grade, and now I have them again in 8th grade because I moved up to 8th grade this year. It's been an eye-opening experience to see the vast difference between 6th graders and 8th graders. And if you've taught those 2 grades, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. 8th graders are much quicker to throw attitude your way, but have the ability to love you fiercely and have the most loyal respect for you. From the second that Dr. Jane Foley from the Milken Foundation started talking about the lucky teacher in our building, I had students around me whispering, "It's going to be you, Mrs. Lee. I know it's you. I know it's you." And 3 months later, they still talk about it all the time in class. They have been so amazing and so complimentary of me and my teaching. My students knew I was coming here today to get this obelisk, and they were so excited and wanted to know if I would please bring it to school tomorrow so they could see it too. So they are as excited for me and my successes as I am for them and their successes. So Theodore Roosevelt had it right when he said, "They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care." And I don't know that I do all that much different with my students than any other teacher, but I do feel like the successes I have had with my students, those are because they know I care. When I was in high school, I had a coach and then teacher who saw my potential, thought I could accomplish anything that I put my mind to, and just loved me. And that teacher was Donna Grottle, which most all of us know in this room, and have been very lucky and have it's a privilege to know her and be a part of her life. You know, our parents have to love us. They have to think we're great because they're our parents, but teachers don't have to. And so when you have a teacher who thinks you're great and loves you and thinks that you can do anything you set your mind to, that is when I think you see true growth and success, and I want to be that for my kids, always, for all of them. So I've asked myself many times over the last 3 months, why me or how did this even happen? And as educators, we tell our kids that hard work pays off, stay focused on your goals, work hard and good things will come your way. A lot of times we tell our kids these things, but we don't really take those things to heart for ourselves. So this award is a reminder to me that when you do work hard, it will pay off. I mean, it's been something I've told my kids, you never know what's going to happen. You're going to come to school one day and your life is going to change. You know, you just never know what's going to happen. So I'm also very grateful for the Milken Foundation, obviously, for their generosity and their support for educators. I think what they do is amazing, and it's mind-boggling to think about how selfless and giving they are and supportive. I look forward to the opportunities that come my way because of this award and the things I've already gotten to be a part of because of it. Winning this award has also been a reminder for me that God has his hand on my life and controls my destiny. So thank you so much.
Well, please stay there, and we'd love to get a picture with you. All right. Would your Superintendent Frazier and Principal Young also come and join? And board members, would you come and stand for a photo as well?
Where are we looking first?
Okay, we're
going to
look one camera
okay.
at a time,
okay.
So we'll just
kind of
do that. Okay, here we go.
Take my keyboard. Yeah, batteries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Hold on. I have one of those too, the wireless. So I was like, what kind of batteries they take? You have the PowerPoint. Is that what you're talking about?
Just to join.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the reason I ask, there's a memo that accompanies it, and I just want to make sure that's redacted.
Right.
With the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. All right, and board members, there are only 40 in the country that were named, and Brooke was one of those 40 distinguished Milken Award winners. And we know that you are inspiring others as well as those in your classrooms today to do what Donna Grottle did for you.
Yes.
And that's pretty wonderful. And thank you. We're so honored your family came and we had a chance to meet them. So thank you so very much. It's good to
thank
see you.
You.
Thank you. Thank you. By the way, board members, Annette Price has just been amazing in coordinating all of that at the department, and she truly is single-handedly responsible for the 3 years of $25,000 each being awarded to Milken educators, and that is unrestricted cash, so it's pretty neat. All right, we're so grateful for Annette. Okay, so board members, I'd like to also, for those of you who weren't able to join us, I am first of all thankful for those who were a part of the February 17th big, huge trauma summit that we put on with 10,000 registered to attend at the Cox Convention Center Arena called Teaching in the Shadow of Trauma. Bridges to Hope. And we were so very grateful to have so many attendees from all over the state, those educators, school leaders, district leaders, mental health providers, counselors, who all came together. It's actually the largest professional development event in our state history, and it's one that was certainly due to our keynote speaker, Dr. Bruce Perry, arguably the world's leading expert on childhood trauma and that experience and the impact on the brain, as he does work in his clinical research and strategies that empower teachers to develop trust and hope in their students. And I know that those of you who were able to join us, Ms. Hernandez, as well as Mr. Bobek, Ms. Moneys, for an extended time afterwards with a special lunch, and then Dr. Bruce Perry after the morning with those teachers came and spent the afternoon with our grant recipients that are doing some of the mental health work that we are piloting in the state in some of our mental health deserts in rural Oklahoma, and it was just remarkable. So I want to give you a little glimpse in about a minute. For those of you who weren't able to join us, take a look at the screen.
This is an opportunity for me to share some of the work of our network with educators and colleagues in Oklahoma.
In education, we touch these kids daily, and that's where they get the most help.
A great opportunity is to provide a little bit of capacity building for educators about the impact of trauma on the developing brain, what the implications of that are for the educational setting, and suggest some strategies that can help educators create an environment that will make it easier for kids that are dysregulated to learn.
What I'm going to take back today and process a lot of is how I can use those regulation strategies, maybe look for more with my students.
It's the small moments that we really get to make a change for children, and we think that relationships are important, but we got to learn a little bit more about exactly how important they are, and hopefully shift our priorities a little bit to support healthy relationships and healthy families, and just see how important that is and what kind of impact that can have.
All right. Also, a big thank you to Justin Newton, our director of events, and her and his staff, Amanda Jones and Jeremy Irons, for all of their work. There was a team about 200 who were helping to facilitate our guests at that event, and well over 100 right here in this department that helped. So thank you for all of them. And then finally, I want you to know that it's important to not only hear from teachers and have that opportunity to be with them as we are training for our classrooms and schools and that work, but it's also to hear, it's important for us to hear student voices and to let that help shape and guide and direct what we do moving forward. So we had our first meeting for the year of our superintendent's student advisory council, and over 100 of our students that were nominated by their various districts and then were selected were able to join us. And I wanted to give you a little sneak peek at some of what was on their mind, and we did this last Friday. So take a look.
This is the Student Advisory Council, and we're listening to students and asking them, what's holding you back? And what could we do differently in school that would have you better prepared?
I've noticed a lot of my classmates and peers, their mental health has been not the best. So mental health definitely is the biggest thing that I'm concerned about right now.
It's not out there. The communication is out there from teacher to student. So we're trying to get that out there and see what we can do to improve that.
The answers are really important as we think about how do we pass legislation or change policy or change graduation requirements to really take away some of the hurdles that our kids are identifying.
I believe civic engagement and just really the idea of service should be implemented into each student, because not only is it a good way for the student to be able to personally develop and to be exposed to a variety of different viewpoints, but also it's just a great way to give back and to be able to really be a part of the community.
It's just important that we get our voices out and we know somebody actually is listening.
So our next time we will meet is on March 30th. You are welcome to join and listen in. It is remarkable what we hear from students. And one of the things that comes up every time is they have great concern about how to do their taxes, which is an interesting thing for them to be concerned about right now. But really, it is much of this conversation led to big changes that we have made. And one, we used to give 7 end of instruction exams to graduate, which ended up being something that just checked a box. And through our concern about not having a lot of value after students graduate, we took that to the student advisory and lots of conversation confirming that we needed something different. And now we have the ACT or SAT instead. And this is something that certainly was part of these early conversations. So you're welcome to attend the next one if you would like. I also need to recognize some of our, as required in statute, every first-year superintendent does need to attend a board meeting. And we've got some that we want to recognize for the record and make sure that anyone else that we've missed with the sign-in sheet has also been recognized. So if you would stand when I call your name. We've got Brian Keith of Kearney. Thank you, Brian. Also, Julie Bills, Comanche. And go ahead and stay standing so we can just see you all there. Thank you, Julie. And Angela Rhodes Guyman. Thank you. Bruce Ray. And is it Leach? Yes, thank you. Also, we've got Brent Haken Morrison. Thank you. And Ronald Vick Okima. Okay, yay, thank you. Let's see. Barbara McDonald. Is it Ravia?
Ravia.
Okay. See, there. This is like the trick to hide behind the column. I cannot see you. All right, let's see. Adam Beauchamp Stigler. Also, we've got Keith Sinor. Did I say it right? All right, and it's Tuttle, right? There you are. Okay, thank you. And one last, it looks like, David Pitts from, is it Ninica? Okay, there. Did I miss anyone? Yes.
Marcia Cusack from Tuluga.
All right, Marcia, welcome. Thank you all for your service. Appreciate it. Okay, very good. All right, board members, we're to our very first action item, which is item number 4A, discussion of possible action on the minutes for the January 23rd, 2020 regular board minutes meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion and proper second. Any discussion? All right, please call the roll.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffman?
Aye. Okay, that motion carries. Next, we have public comment. We have 3 people signed up for public comment. Item 5, so first is Julie Engel. And Julie is here from Oklahoma State University in Stillwater to talk about the science standards.
Good morning. My name is Julie Engel, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about my support of the 2020 science standards. So I was a high school science teacher for 25 years. 23 of those years I was in Alva and 2 years in Medford. Then I got an opportunity to serve as an Albert Einstein Distinguished Educator Fellow, which took me to Washington, D.C. For that year, I worked with the National Science Foundation in the Office of Cyber Infrastructure. Also, while I was there, I was asked to join committees on Capitol Hill when they talked about national science education issues. I currently serve as Director of Secondary Science Education for Oklahoma State University, where I get to prepare college students to become quality science teachers. So as a faculty member, I also get to serve on various committees. And probably one of the committees that I'm most honored to serve on is working with the State Department on the state science education standards. I've served on the writing committee for the 2014 and the 2020 science standards. And I'm here to tell you that in writing the 2014 standards, I promise you there was a lot of research that went into developing those standards. Each standard is based on three dimensions of learning: science and engineering practices, cross-cutting concepts, and disciplinary core ideas. So when a teacher reads a standard, they can see what a student should know and be able to do. So you may say, well, wait a minute, you're here in favor of the 2020 standards. So let me explain. So say you have an opportunity to build a new house. You put a lot of research into deciding what materials to use. Do you want a one-level or a two-story house? Do you want a two-car garage or a three-car garage? You watch a lot of HGTV to decide what kind of light fixtures, countertops, cabinets you want. Then you take your ideas to the architect. The architect draws out what you have in your mind. Then you take the blueprints and you take it to the contractor. And the contractor builds your dream home. Your family moves into this dream home that has a very strong foundation, and you live in it for year after year after year, and you're listening to the voices of your family. And you wish that if you had just moved that toilet paper roll 6 inches, or you added an extra car area to your garage to have a three-car garage instead of a two-car garage, or you put that cable into a second wall, you would have had the perfect home. That's the same thing with the 2014 to the 2020 standards. The 2014 standards are phenomenal. The 2020 standards are phenomenal squared, because we listen to the voice of teachers. The standards, the 2020 standards reflect the comments from the teachers. So there are some upgrades to the 2020 standards. So thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the 2020 standards, and I hope you will vote in favor for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Next, we have Michelle Ron from Claremore Public Schools.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Ron. I have the privilege of teaching and collaborating with Brooke Lee, who was just here earlier. So we're extremely proud of her, and great things are happening at Claremore Public Schools. I have taught science for the last 6 years at the middle school level. I currently teach a STEM class at Will Rogers Junior High for sixth grade students. This was my first time to go through this process of writing and being on the executive committee for the science standards. So I want to talk a little bit about my perspective as a classroom teacher versus a college professor. Dr. Engel, those were beautiful words. I am also a state finalist for 2020 as a teacher of the year, and I have also been honored as being the Presidential Award of Excellence Teacher for Science, for elementary science. When I won that award, I had the honor of sitting in on a committee for the federal STEM plan, five-year plan. And so being from Oklahoma, when I was on that federal committee, I was so proud of our state and of our state science standards, because we are right up there with the other states. And that is important as a teacher, because I want my students in Claremore, Oklahoma, which is a small town, a lot of my kids don't have a lot of opportunity. And by having our standards as rigorous as they are and having them enveloped in those three dimensions gives my student, I know that my students in my classroom are going to have the same opportunity as students in New York or Connecticut. And these standards allow us to have a very easy entry for learning However, because it's entwined with science and engineering practices, it allows us to bring them up to higher levels, as high a level as we need to for our students. Therefore, we can meet all of their individual needs. And that's what I love about our standards. I love the engineering and science practices that are pulled in there. It allows us to not only teach that content, but we're allowed to pull in those inquiry investigations. Children develop their own investigations. We also, within those standards, students are able to make a claim and back it up with their evidence and argue their point, not in the same way we argue sometimes, but on a scientific level. So teaching our students those higher order thinking skills is very important to me as a teacher, knowing that my kids will be successful not only statewide, but they're going to be competitive and successful on a national and even a global level. So that's really important to me as a teacher. The process was phenomenal. I met excellent teachers across the state that I had never met before. Also some old friends that I have known in the science community in our state. We had teachers from private school and public school coming together, and we were just able to pick each other's brains on their specialty, on the grade level that they taught as well. And a big shout out to our state. We also developed pre-K science standards, which is incredible. We are so fortunate to have this. Research shows us that we have to fill that pipeline at the earliest level in pre-K. That's pretty early. So if we can get those kids hooked on science and thinking critically at the pre-K level and bring them up and build up all of that background knowledge that they need to be successful in high school, higher science classes, and especially into college and graduating from college and entering those STEM fields. So thank you for giving me this opportunity, and I support the new science standards, and I hope you will too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, we also have a third comment, individual that wants to give public comment, Brittany Lane, Lawton Public Schools. It's Brittany. Okay. All right, then we will just keep moving. All right, very good. Item number 6 is your consent docket. Board members, would you have items to consider here? Yes.
On the library media specialist specifically, is there a deadline that these are supposed to be? Like, is this within the deadline?
Yeah, I think, there he is.
Ryan Piper, Director of the Regional Accreditation Officers.
Good morning, board members. How is everyone? Yes, the answer to your question, Ms. Moneys, is that there is a deadline. Those are to be in by October 1st, unless there's a case of emergency, i.e. someone leaves, passes away, things that puts the district in a bad spot as far as meeting that accreditation requirement. Specifically, as it pertains to FELT, the situation there, the district did everything they were supposed to do in the sense of getting it in on time. Problem was they sent it to the wrong location. We're just now finding it. And so perhaps some follow-up would have been nice, but at any rate, that's the situation with that one specifically. The other ones are that we've lost someone for one reason or another.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Thank you. Other questions?
This is more just a comment that I'm noticing based on the applications that are before us today. It looks like all of these applications are justified. And that people are going through the steps of trying to locate library and media specialists, and there's a shortage. But one thing I noticed is we have Norman and Oklahoma City Public Schools, two of the largest districts in our state that are having difficulties, which tells me if they're having difficulties locating people in the most populous areas, how in the world are schools with less populated areas going to identify media specialists? And it feels like we are now pigeonholing people into library media specialists when is that serving our goal of maybe instead are we better off, and this is probably statutory, but trying to get people to go into maybe reading specialties or the science of reading or something else that creates the same end goal of improving reading in our state. I would assume that's part of the goal of ensuring that libraries are properly staffed. But I just wonder if we are we have a problem here that needs to be addressed on a deeper level.
Short answer is yes, of course, with the teacher shortage. But I would say the answer is we need all of that.
Okay.
Our students deserve to have certified library media specialists, and that we also need, as you described, those who are trained in the science of reading, those who can provide support for students as reading specialists, et cetera. But yeah, your remarks resonate. Are there any other comments about that, or okay? Do we want to deal with that person on there?
Board members, with respect to item 6C on the emergency certification requests, as we've come to know in the past few months, we do have 5 individuals that are present today, I believe anyway. These individuals would not have the requisite degree or experience for the pre-K through third grades, and as a result of the guidance that was sent out to districts from this agency and the board last July, I believe, those 5 individuals are required and I think are here today. And you should have their names and their resumes and so forth in front of you.
And that is, let's see which tab.
It's 6C. On the list that's in front of us, Rebecca or Rita Andrews is the first one that I show. Looks like she is here.
All right. You want to let her
know? Yeah, if board members have questions.
Board members, do you have questions?
I definitely have questions. I would almost say I would have questions for every one of them.
All right. Let's just go ahead then.
Yeah.
All right, please come on to the up to the podium. And
I believe this request is from Hugo Public Schools.
Yes, thank you.
And is your superintendent here as well?
No, he could not make it today, so the assistant principal.
Okay.
Elementary school.
We have this assistant principal as well.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
I know you. How long did you drive this morning?
It was about 3.5 hours.
Thank you for being here.
Ms. Andrews, what are your responsibilities going to be?
I'm currently in a kindergarten readiness classroom. It's getting them prepared to go into the kindergarten. Whenever they were screened at the first of the year, they were not quite to that point to go ahead and proceed into the kindergarten. So we're trying to get them to that point. That way they can go on next year.
Are these children on IEPs?
I believe
A few of them are. The majority of the students in that classroom had not been to any kind of Head Start or any kind of early education institute before they came to us. So a lot of their kindergarten screenings were in the 11th percentile, 20th percentile. So they just weren't quite where they needed to be to begin the kindergarten foundational skills.
What has the district done to attempt to find someone that has a background in early childhood education or in remediating children that are kind of behind the curve?
Of course, you know, we posted the job opening as soon as we knew it was going to be. Both the building principal and myself have reached out to colleges as far away as 3 hours from us to see if there was any outgoing students that would graduate. Unfortunately, the college closest to us had one education major that graduated in December, and we've had no applicants at all, and we feel like we have tried every resource that we have to get a certified applicant in our building.
And so you've recruited Ms. Andrews.
Yes.
And could you tell us what caused you to recruit her? What were those attributes?
She started out as a substitute, and she was just able to manage the classes really well. She did a phenomenal job for us as a sub, and with her having a college degree, we asked her if she would just be interested in maybe a career in education, and she said she would love it, so we've been helping her gain the proper certification.
Do you intend to continue in education? And
yes, I believe that if I can get everything squared away and take my tests and get that going, I believe, yes, I would like to stay and continue on into the education field. It's not something that I had originally planned on, but I feel like life takes us on different paths, and I believe this is the one for now, and I'm going to try to stick to it as best I can.
What is your reason for choosing education?
Well, like she said, I started off as a sub, so I didn't really intend on being here in a permanent position. But I felt like after being with those students and working with them, I mean, just something as exciting as writing their name, I mean, that's very rewarding to get to see how excited they get over that. So I think that was kind of another thing that just really pushed me, gave me the extra shove and boost into this.
And what about the training that we're requiring of all who are emergency certified with the letters training to ensure they have a foundation in the science of reading? Is that something that you'll commit to engaging in and completing?
Yes, 100%. I'm still learning on the steps that and the requirements to get to that point. But I am going to, like I said earlier, do my best to get it all completed.
Okay. All right.
I don't have any
other questions.
Other questions?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Okay, who else do we have here?
And board members, I'll just mention it's entirely in your discretion. You can take one of these at a time or the five at once. It's up to you as you feel comfortable. The next individual that I show is Adam Carnes, a request out of Tulsa Public Schools.
Hello, pleasure to meet you.
Good morning.
Thank you. Welcome. And what is, let's see, just go ahead and state the position that you're... have been recruited to fill.
I am a kindergarten teacher at Bell Elementary.
Okay.
I'm the assistant principal at Bell Elementary.
And I'm Tasha Johnson, talent management strategist here in lieu of Dr. Gist.
Thank you.
Can you talk about, I mean, you have a very extensive resume as far as kind of on the art side. What got you wanting to be a kindergarten teacher?
Well, first of all, my fiance teaches at B'nai Amuna with preschool students, and she's finishing up her degree, so she has a year and a half left, and I collaborate with her on some of her assignments, and you know, just the children, there's a life force to them, you know, that's so beautiful and pure, and I just really enjoy working with the age group. I was teaching at Tulsa Community College with adults, and, you know, being an artist, you have the opportunity to do things in creative and unique ways and pull out the childlike qualities of adults. So it gets them, kind of shakes them up and has them thinking in a different route. So when the opportunity came up, you know, I jumped on it. And like, so for instance, we have a lot of like behavioral management issues that we have to regulate at school, and art is an exceptional tool to engage the students and get them involved in something exciting. Like, I also have been an art director, and you learn like people want to be entertained. So how do you entertain people? Like, art is huge. So I've worked with the Gilcrease, a local museum, where I did Sunday fun day, and kids around 4 to 8 range would show up with their family, and we would do like a trick or treat collage, and they would pick their favorite piece of candy off a table and do a drawing of it in crayons and glue it to the board. So it's an engaging community project. So I bring things like that into the classroom. I have a Miss Chancho's box of mystery with a genie hat of my bulldog, and there's fur on it, and the kids reach in with a blindfold and they pull out their prize, and I have three different teams, a red team, a purple team, and a green team. And at the end of 2 weeks, you know, the teams that have the most points, which is an incentive to, you know, focus and behave better, their team gets to get up, and it also teaches them to work as a team, and, you know, that not everybody is selfish, and, you know, we all get a chance to win at some point in time. So those tools are just, like, having that background is, like, such an asset, and I'm excited to be able to continue to use that with children.
Can you tell us about your education?
So I have an undergraduate at the Ringling College of Art and Design, which is like one of the top 10 schools for illustration, computer animation. So I took illustration. I took a children's literature class there, and that's also how I got, you know, kind of like sparked my excitement for this. And I also have a master's degree from the New York Academy of Art in painting. It's the only school in the world where you could. That's focused around the figure using traditional training for contemporary discourse. And some of the top artists in the world teach there, and I get to have critiques with them. So I'm always, you know, thinking of the big picture thing. So, like, again, we use CKLA, listening and learning. And some people might think, like, why would I use, you know, why is this such a huge emphasis? But it shows you it's not just about the vocabulary. The vocabulary actually supports the overall reading comprehension, and this is how they help develop fluency through the way that you speak. You're giving them an example and presenting that sort of engagement, and it follows them the rest of the time.
It seems like your life's journey has taken you from Florida to New York and other areas. Are you originally from Oklahoma?
No, actually, so I came here from, I grew up in Florida, and I went to New York to get my master's degree. I fell in love with it, stayed there for 5 years, and then I was awarded the George Kaiser Family Foundation's Tulsa Artist Fellowship. So they awarded 24 people that year, 12 visual artists and 12 writers. And it's sort of a recruiting program to enrich the culture in Tulsa and help develop it and bring new ideas and experiences. And so I blindly came down here, like, I read the Wikipedia page, and I was like, all right, Tulsa, here we come.
So with that said, do you plan on this being a permanent thing?
Oh, yeah.
Is this something temporary, or is it
This is definitely a permanent thing. I bought a house here. I met my fiance here. I fell in love with the people. Everybody is, like, very sincere and easygoing, and it's a family-oriented town, so I'm here to stay, and I'm excited about the position, and
I'd just like to say, you know, oftentimes in schools and with financial constraints, arts sometimes are the first things to go, and I think it's such a gift that you are there and able to bring that into your classroom and infuse those learning opportunities for your students. So I appreciate you taking on this call and saying yes to Tulsa, but also saying yes to education.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Can you talk about, so I'm the mom of a kindergartner, and
okay.
Like, he loves art. That's his favorite part, I think, of the class. But can you talk about, and maybe it's a district question, like, as far as, like, kind of the on the reading and math side, like, what kind of support has the district given you? You know, obviously you have extreme talent in art, and that's hugely beneficial in kindergarten, but, like, as far as kind of reading foundations and math foundations, what kind of support have you been given to teach that as well?
Sure. Well, first off, I meet with Miss Jones. She's the other kinder teacher, and every day we'd kind of talk about how the day went, and we'd discuss, you know, strategies and, you know, kind of role playing, whatever, give examples how we could do it better. So that's a huge asset. And also twice a week I meet with an instructional coach and a behavioral management coach. And also there's on-site leaders that are constantly demonstrating no-nonsense nurturing techniques. And I've started the course online. Like, before I started, I shadowed at local schools at McKinley with Miss Tunnel, who is an incredible no-nonsense nurturer. And I was just really blown away by that. So I immediately had a very positive, beautiful picture before I even walked in the door. I went to B'nai Amuna and shadowed there, which they're a Reggio program, And so it's nice to see like the opposing forces and like how I could bring the two together to, you know, cultivate my own classroom. Does that answer your question?
Great, thank you.
And there are also Super Saturday ongoing professional development opportunities that Mr. Carnes will be able to participate in. And even though he is working this year, when he comes in next year, he will still have the benefit of an instructional coach / new teacher mentor for his first full year.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Excellent. Well, we're glad you're in Oklahoma.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We also have Kale Hickson.
May not be here.
Is Kale Hickson here? Okay. No. All right. And finally, is it Brittany Lane? Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Can you tell us about your education?
Yes, I currently have my Bachelor's of Science in Psychology, and I am also in school for my Master's. I have been a PCA before for a self-contained autism classroom for first and second grade, and that is my education. I'm also a Sunday school teacher. With my mom, we take turns for first and second grade as well. And I'm currently teaching second grade.
Okay, very good. All right.
So right now, are you teaching a self-contained autism class now?
No, not right now. It's just a normal standard classroom setting. And it's second grade, and I've got 22 kids.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you talk about what encourage you to go into education, and do you plan to continue on that path?
Yes, ma'am. So I have always wanted to do counseling, psychology, something around that. I thought it was nursing at one point, but it's not. My mother's been a teacher 22 years, so watching her over the years has also helped me realize, you know, what I would like to do. I do have four daughters, so they are also grade level, so I can see as well, you know, at home how they act and how children act at school. So I do love children. I do love every kid in my class, and I just really enjoy education and helping them learn. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And then I spoke too early. We have one left. Roxanne Wiseman. Hello. Hi. Welcome. And can you tell us your education background?
Absolutely. My name is Roxanne Wiseman. I have a bachelor's of science degree in sociology and minored in criminal justice and graduated from Cameron University in 2014.
Okay. And what is it that you've been recruited to teach?
I teach third grade at a Title I elementary school, Lincoln, in Lawton, Oklahoma.
Okay. Very good. Board members, do you have questions for Ms. Wiseman?
It looks like, you know, most of your background is kind of social work.
Yes, ma'am.
Side and Boys and Girls Club. Can you kind of talk about why you wanted to transition into education?
Absolutely. I've been a social worker since I was 18 years old. I started at a shelter for deprived and neglected children. Shortly after graduating college, I became an administrator at a juvenile detention facility in Lawton. It was a 25-bed facility. Spent 2 years as an administrator there and moved to Texas in 2016 and worked a gang outreach program in East Fort Worth called Coming Up with 14 to 24-year-olds. Did that for a short time before accepting a position as an investigator for Child Protective Services in Hood, Somerville, and Erath counties in Texas. So I saw a lot of light and dark, but mainly dark, and it was time to see the other side of the coin for a little while. I come from a long line of educators. I'm a fourth generation educator at this point, and I knew at some point I would go into education. I mean, it was a given. I mean, my dad, both my grandparents, paternal grandparents, and my paternal great-grandparents were educators. So social work, I just had to do the hard stuff before I could get to the still pretty tough stuff, but it's enjoyable as well, and there's light.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you very much. Okay, then board members for, which is the board? I think we may have some comments regarding the individual that did not come to the podium.
Right, yeah. So board members, as I mentioned earlier, I thought there were five individuals present today for the five requests. It appears that there are four. Mr. Hickson, in looking at his resume, it appears that in the current position and then previously he may have been assigned in a special ed classroom. Seeing some of the questions today and in earlier months, I think it would be crucial to find out what assignment he would be in. And without that information, I would not recommend that we move forward on that action or that item today.
So just a reminder for those in the room, you cannot be emergency certified for special education. And so we just need to make it very clear that a placement in emergency certification cannot be as a special education teacher. And we feel that needs to take place before we would bring that name to you.
And the district's request was for elementary education, but given the language on the resume, mm-hmm. I think it's important to have that information, full context before making a decision on that.
Do we know what kind of duties he's doing right now or what he's teaching?
Right now he would be a substitute teacher, which, and this is the ironic piece to this, because while we have positions that go unfilled because they're lacking a qualified applicant to fill that certified special ed, a substitute does not have those requirements. And often we will see long-term subs in these positions. And so it is still very important that we have clear communication with this individual. We would not want this emergency certification to somehow mean that that individual is working IEPs, individual education plans, or dealing without being under the strict guidance of IDEA. All right. So I just will make that note that we are pulling that name from our recommendation.
That I'll move to approve the consent docket.
With that.
Mr. Hickson's removal.
Yes. Removal. Thank you. Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further comments or discussion? Okay. Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Bradley? Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Munnings?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. Okay, that motion carries, and congratulations to those of you who were here with us today that spoke at the podium. We appreciate your service, and we look forward to seeing you in Oklahoma teaching for a long time. All right? Thank you. All right, item seven is an additional action items. Here we would like to call for... It's going to actually be Elizabeth Monk who will give the presentation for discussion and possible action to approve the academic standards for fine arts, please.
Good morning, Superintendent Hoffmeister and honorable members of the board. My name is Dr. Elizabeth Mon. I'm Director of Fine Arts and Curriculum and Instruction here at the State Department of Education. And I am before you today to present the Oklahoma Academic Standards for Fine Arts for your consideration. Over the past 2 years, we have been creating and revising fine arts standards in dance, drama, theater, music, and visual art in accordance with this statute. Throughout the writing and revision process, we had three groups of arts educators and supporters working together. The executive team cast a vision for the work and guided the writing and revision process for dance, drama, theater, music, and visual art. The writing committee members applied and were selected to be a part of the process. They wrote or revised the standards and responded to feedback from the draft committees and public comment. And those who may not have had the time to serve on the writing committee or were not selected for the writing committee were part of the draft committee. And this group reviewed the first draft of the standards and provided feedback to the writing committee. We had a large executive committee for all four disciplines. You can see them listed here. You see we have a large range of people from across the state who contributed to the work. All members have experience. Too many. Goodness. All members have experience in at least one of the four disciplines, and some are fine arts administrators that oversee the arts in their school district. We have members of the executive team here today. Jennifer Allen Barron is the Director of Education with the Oklahoma Arts Council. Brandy Sitz is an arts administrator with Putnam City Public Schools. And we also have a member of the writing team present. Mr. Chauvin Aaron of Ardmore City Public Schools is an instrumental music educator and was part of the writing team for secondary music. The writing team was comprised of 44 members total, and within those members, they represented 17 school districts, 6 higher education institutions, and there were 3 community members. In the draft committee, we had 27 members total. And within that committee, we have members from 14 school districts, 6 higher education institutions, and 2 community members. We started the process of standards creation and revision in January of 2018, and we continued the work until May of 2019. Over the summer, draft review teams met virtually to review the standards and offer suggestions. The writing teams met again in September and October to revise the documents according to the recommendations from the draft review. A public comment period was open from October 24th to November 30th. The writing teams met to reconcile and respond to the comments in December. During public comment, we received many positive comments, such as the standards are more user-friendly. Most of the comments were for music, and some of the comments caught errors and inconsistencies within the standards, so we were happy to see that. The vision for this work is that the Oklahoma Standards for Fine Arts are designed to support all Oklahoma students to develop and achieve artistic literacy and to promote access and equity in the arts. Fine arts encompasses 4 different artistic disciplines: dance, drama, theater, music, and visual art. Each discipline is uniquely defined, but they share common artistic concepts. You can see those concepts more clearly in the artistic processes. The processes include creating, performing, connecting, and responding. If students are in a fine arts class, they will experience all 4 processes in that art form. Throughout the creation and revision process, there have been some shifts and changes to the standards. First, we have added pre-K and kindergarten grade standards to all 4 disciplines. We have also added dance and drama theater standards. And we have expanded the secondary music standards. Here is a selection of standards for pre-kindergarten that are part of the creating process in all 4 disciplines. You can see that the students will be exploring and experiencing creativity through these objectives. Oklahoma was one of the first states to enact dance certification for pre-K through 12. However, we are one of the last states to create dance standards, and we are looking forward to using these standards to support dance education across the state. This is an example of a 7th grade dance standard. What I'd like to emphasize is that teachers will be able to help their students make connections between Oklahoma Native American dances and dances around the world. The state and local connections that could be made between the students' communities and dance are exciting to imagine and could be very powerful. This is an example of the high school drama theater standards. At the accomplished level in this standard, students will be creating their own one-act plays. The students will be able to write and possibly direct their own dramatic ideas. And this creative opportunity sets the Oklahoma drama theater standards, apart from other states. An excerpt of the 2014 standards in choral music are listed here. As you can see, there are 2 standards that address performance, and neither of them goes into much details. Our former 2014 music standards at the secondary level contain just 9 objectives with no differentiation. The new standards have been greatly expanded with the expectations for performance. And you can see the overall standard here on the left. But what I would really like to draw your attention to is the differentiation for students who are just starting choir in perhaps sixth or seventh grade all the way up into a high school class. These standards would also be used for band or orchestra, and with some slight changes, they could be used in a music history class or music theory. Every student is not expected to reach the accomplished level by the time they leave a class or ensemble, but it is expected that students will work towards proficiency throughout their experience. As you can see from this timeline, I'm here before you today to present the standards for your consideration and approval. Upon approval, the standards will be submitted to the legislature for their consideration. If approved, we will move forward with implementation and support during the 2020-21 school year. So I'd like to thank you for your time today, and if you have questions, I'd love to hear from you.
Just think that Oklahoma was one of the last states to implement dance.
I believe I came on board the summer of 2018, and we've had some turnover in the fine arts director position. So just due to the inconsistencies of that, I think that's why it wasn't picked up until now.
One of the things that's really exciting, as you know, only four states have universal pre-K, and so Oklahoma being one of those states, we believed it was high time for us to have our academic standards vertically articulated that go all the way to the very beginning foundation that's formed in pre-K. If we have full-day kindergarten, of course, that then leads on into the elementary, middle school, and high school levels of accomplishment. And so this is really going to see an impact and effect over time, but this is something we started with our new academic standards in math, English language arts, and then fine arts, and as you'll see in a little bit, science as well. And social studies. We just did that last year.
And to that end, I mean, mine's just more of a comment. I have a son in kindergarten and a daughter in pre-K, so I just want to thank everybody for, I do think it's incredibly important to bring the standards all the way down in all of the subjects, including fine arts. So thank you for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. I know this is a lot of work, so please thank those who were part of the teams that made this possible, and we really appreciate your work. Would you like to tell those in the room about the art behind me? We have rotating exhibits every month, and this is featuring some student art. So why don't you mention what that is?
Yes. So the State Department of Education supports the Oklahoma Summer Arts Institute at Quartz Mountain every year, and it happens in June. It's a two-week intensive art experience for high school students, and they apply to be selected, and they have different areas of dance and film and visual art that you see there. Students are selected from across the state, so it is the top level in every discipline that goes to Quartz Mountain for 2 weeks. If you ever have the chance to go experience that, it is amazing. They bring in clinicians from around the country who are blown away by the fact that we have this experience for our high school students. Most states do not. And the students get to work with those experts in the field and make all sorts of connections for possibly post-high school experiences. So it's a wonderful thing. And there's more artwork around down the hallway, too. So
yeah, there's a full gallery down this hall. And then also, just a reminder, the students are selected for their talent, of course, but also regionally, so that there's a full representation of the state, and they don't pay a penny. It is 2 weeks residential institute for them, and they go on to do incredible things in their life, and some of the lifelong connections that they make at that camp and with those accomplished in the various fields from around the country. They are able to make those connections that take them in amazing places with their art, and we're so grateful to be able to highlight that, and it was just perfect timing to have the exhibit here today during this particular month. So you'll have to enjoy that as you exit if you go down this executive hall. All right. Thank you. Are there other questions or comments about this? All right, same. Yes.
Do we go ahead and approve individually?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Then I'll make a motion to approve the academic standard for fine arts.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. Any other comments or discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Ms. Manis?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
All right, aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, very good. Now, next up, we have Tiffany Neal, Executive Director of Curriculum and Instruction, who is here to present discussion and possible action to approve the proposed academic standards for science.
Good morning, Superintendent Hoffmeister and honorable members of the board. As Superintendent mentioned, I'm Tiffany Neal. I'm the Executive Director of Curriculum and Instruction here at the State Department. I'm also serving as the Acting Science and Engineering Director for the State Department, which was previously my position for 5 years before assuming this role. I'm very pleased to share with you today the work and effort by hundreds of science educators and science education stakeholders as we revise the science standards this year. Sorry, it's at the end. That's why. There was a, this is
and
very
now call
odd.
For the, no.
So, as Dr. Mond mentioned, every 6 years, in accordance with the law, we do review or revise academic standards, and science standards were last reviewed in 2014. In a similar fashion as the Fine Arts Standards Committee work was designed, the science standards revision or review process also had three committees, an executive committee, a writing committee, and a draft committee. I'd like to share with you the individuals that served on the executive committee for the science standards review. We had Xam Black, who's the executive director of the Tulsa Regional STEM Alliance. We had Wendy Howard, who's a biology teacher at Frederick Public Schools. Heather Johnston, who's here in the audience today, is a curriculum coordinator for science at Putnam City Public Schools. Chandra Peters, who's an administrator at Woodward Public Schools. She's also a longtime science teacher for high school. We have Michelle Ron, who you heard from this morning, who's a middle school teacher at Claremore Public Schools. And Dr. Dan Vincent, who is a university professor at UCO, the University of Central Oklahoma. He focuses primarily on preparing elementary science education students. For the writing committee, we had 40 members total, and of those 40 members, 25 school districts were represented, three individuals that represented higher education, and two community members. For the draft committee, we had 25 members representing 19 school districts, one individual who represented higher education, and one community member. A little bit about the timeline for the science standards review. We began the process in April of last year by putting out applications for people around the state to apply for this process. One thing I'd like to share with you is that every person that applied to be a part of the process served on either the writing team or the draft team. The writing team began to meet in May, and as you can see, they continued meeting for the remainder of the year. The draft team began to meet in October, and this is where they had their first chance to provide feedback on the draft standards that the writing team was producing. They continued their work all the way through December. We were able to publish public comment for the standards in November, and we had the public comment available for a little over 30 days. We also held a few focus groups around the state to get feedback from individuals. I'm here today to present to you again the work of our science educators and experts in the science education field for your consideration of approval for the standards. Upon approval, as Dr. Mon mentioned, the standards would go to the legislature for their consideration as well. If approved, we will begin support this summer to support teachers and school districts with the implementation. I'd like to share with you a little bit about the criteria that this committee utilized to evaluate the 2014 standards to determine if any changes or revisions should be made. Here are a few of the attributes, as they call them, for high-quality science standards. So the first thing they wanted to look at was, do the current standards 2014 represent rigorous learning goals to support college and career readiness? Are they scientifically accurate? Are they clear, concise, and comprehensible to science educators? Do they represent a clear component and progression across grade bands? This is essential in our academic standards in Oklahoma. We want to ensure that students have the proper building blocks year after year to build proficiency in the discipline that they're learning. The committee also wanted to ensure that the standards would lead to interesting and relevant instruction for students. And lastly, they wanted to assure, as you heard from two of the public comment folks this morning, that the standards adhered to integrating what we call the three dimensions of science. If you're hearing that for the first time, I want to share with you a little bit where the recommendation for the three dimensions of science come from. In 2011, the National Academies of Science published their comprehensive report based on extensive research in science education for how students learn science and what things students should learn across their K through 12 education, what science ideas they should learn. That particular document, again, several years of evidence went into and research went into the publication of that document. That document for the first time recommended nationally that students should be prepared and experiencing what we call the three dimensions of science. That particular document led states like ours to utilize it to inform our standards review or revision process. So this document was utilized in 2014 for the standards review, and it was also a resource utilized by this year's committee to conduct the review as well. Additionally, the committee looked at other state standards, including those states that have adopted standards known as the Next Generation Science Standards, to inform this process. Now, you may be asking a little more about what are these three dimensions. And so I spoke to Superintendent Hoffmeister, and I hope that you all will permit. It seems appropriate to engage in a small or slight science investigation to explore what these three dimensions really are. So I have for you, it's under here. You should have three items in front of you, a cup, a note card, and a penny. So I want you to imagine I'm a teacher in an elementary classroom, and maybe you're the students. And perhaps I ask you what you think might happen to this penny if I were to flick this card, not this way, but sort of even with the card. You can imagine students might have all kinds of ideas about what could happen based on maybe experiences they've had before school. You probably have ideas as well. You're welcome to attempt to flick the card and see what happens to the penny. I'm also happy to do that for you.
From the legal standpoint, can we sign waivers first?
I will say for safety measures, I do always say, Mr. Bobeck, don't aim your card at anyone at the table for fear of poking their eye out. So I'll give you a little glimpse of how this works. You can imagine the moment in a classroom we say, give it a try. Flick the card and see what happens. Before you can even get that out, what's happening? You're already going for it, right? So I've not done this in front of an audience this large of adults, so we'll see if my nerves interfere here. So you can imagine for students in the room, and by the way, they'd already be picking up that card and trying it dozens more times at this point. But at this point, they probably have a few other questions, like, what would happen if perhaps there were two pennies on the card? What if there was a quarter? What if we used a different piece of paper? What if the cup was larger or smaller? These are all questions that are typical of students when they're conducting this investigation. And what we would say in the science classroom now with this vision for science education of three-dimensional science, we would say we want those students to plan and carry out those investigations to answer the questions that they have. So we would allow students to try out two pennies, a quarter, maybe a different, there you go. Miss Money is going to try it. It's nerve-wracking in front of people.
I'm like, I want to see if I can do it.
So what's interesting is they would try that out. They would record their evidence, and what they would see is nearly every object that they try, and really several pennies or several quarters, every time those items would fall in the cup. So they're seeing a pattern. Now you can imagine what they're beginning to think about is what's causing that pattern that I saw that I didn't expect. I want to know a reason, an explanation. So what this vision for science education does is it says for students, we want you to be engaged in investigations where you collect evidence, you collect information that will help you explain the things of the world that you're interested in. We call this a phenomenon. So if you ever hear that in the science world, and I may say it later today, it just means a natural event that we can explain with science. So what are these three dimensions that we speak so much of? They're the science and engineering practices, which are the skills or science practices that you see here, asking questions, planning and carrying out investigations, analyzing and interpreting data, constructing explanations, engaging in scientific arguments, obtaining, evaluating, and communicating information. You can see, just in this short example of an investigation, how many of these practices students might be involved in just in this investigation. The second dimension that for science that we're talking about today are the cross-cutting concepts. Now, this is fairly new for most science educators, but they were in our 2014 standards and remain today in the 2020 presented to you today. These are the skills that we equate to how scientists and engineers think. When they encounter a phenomenon or a natural event like this, they begin to immediately wonder, is there a pattern associated with that? What's causing that to happen? What are the parts of the system that are impacting what I see? Scientists and engineers have the skill set to really think about that. It almost feels natural. And for many students graduating from high school, they don't necessarily have those skills because we haven't, for many years, prompted them to ask questions about patterns or think about cause and effect. And what we're saying today is that every student in Oklahoma has the opportunity to build those critical thinking skills like scientists and engineers because they're a part of every one of our standards. And then lastly, we have the third dimension, which are the disciplinary core ideas. These are those science ideas that are probably familiar to you that fit under these larger domains of physical science, which is about maybe force and motion, life science, where we might learn about photosynthesis, and earth and space science. The fourth dimension there was new in 2014 and remains today. It's a heavy focus on students engaging in engineering, technology, and applications of science. So just with that investigation that we did, I wanted to show you an example standard from third grade. You'll notice the standard is highlighted sort of in the yellow where it says 3PS21, plan and conduct investigations on the effects of balanced and unbalanced forces on the motion of an object. So again, through this investigation, we can help students understand that there's a force acting up on the penny, when the penny's on the card, and there's a force acting down, which is gravity. And the minute you remove the card, the forces are unbalanced, and now the object moves. And it's as simple as that, what we want to get across to students in third grade. But they do that by planning and carrying out investigations, asking questions, analyzing data, and thinking about what's causing that to happen. In addition to the standard on this screen, you'll notice a couple of other aspects of our Oklahoma academic standards that you may have noticed when you flipped through the standards booklet. For each standard, there's also a clarification statement, which we hope does what its namesake says and provides some clarity to teachers about the intent of the standard. There's an assessment boundary, which lets teachers know this is how far you want to go with your assessment. And then there are what we call foundational boxes, which help teachers more broadly understand what the science and engineering practice, cross-cutting concept, and disciplinary core idea of focus is in that standard. So after engaging you in a short investigation and sharing with you a little bit about this vision for science education that our standards are based on, I want to share with you a few of the shifts associated with the 2020 standards. The first is the addition of play-based pre-K standards. The second represents stronger connections within middle school grades in particular. And the third is increased relevance for all students and increased clarification for teachers. So here's an example of one of our new science pre-K standards. Again, I mentioned that the pre-K standards for science are play-based. So you'll notice the standard at the top says engage in play to explore the physical and natural world. And then teachers have examples of what we really mean by that for kindergarten. I will say one of the strong public comments we got back was how much kindergarten teachers and pre-K teachers appreciated mention of investigations inside and outside the classroom in this clarification statement. But you can also see how much play is involved, and it's investigative play for the purpose of science. Stronger grade level connections. I want to show you just an example here of what we mean by this. So in 2014, a collection of physical science standards at middle school pertaining to chemical reactions, standards that help students really deeply understand chemical reactions. They were placed in two different grade levels. PS11 and PS12 could be found in the seventh grade standards in 2014, and PS13, PS15, and PS16 could be found in eighth grade. In the 2020 standards, the collection of those five standards are now together in seventh grade. And you can now imagine how much more the teacher has an opportunity to strengthen understanding for students when there are five standards tightly connected that help students understand this concept deeply. I also wanted to quickly show you that in 2014, our standard that helps students understand the role of photosynthesis was in LS16, and it was in sixth grade. Then the standard that helps students understand the role in the process of cellular respiration was LS17 in seventh grade. These two science mechanisms are inextricably linked. They really depend on one another, and the science folks in the room are audible at this point. I can hear them. So they were in separate grade levels. They're now moved to seventh grade. But here's the other interesting point I'd like to make. In the 2014 standards, the chemical reaction standards, again, were spread out across two grade levels. The cellular respiration and photosynthesis standards were spread out across two grade levels. The process or mechanism by which cellular respiration and photosynthesis occur is through a chemical reaction. So now, in the 2020 standards, those standards are together with the chemical reaction standards. Again, strengthening opportunities for deep learning and understanding of science ideas just by moving the standards and placing them together because they're dependent on each other. So that's one example of how the standards might have been moved in middle school to ensure that these dependencies were available and together in the same grade level. Lastly, I just want to point your attention to another aspect of the standards that are a shift. There is increased relevance and clarity, and you heard Dr. Engel speak about the increased clarity this morning. Here is an example of a second grade standard. What you see in black represents what was the standard in 2014, and you'll see a line marked out and replaced with the red language. So here is an example where the teachers in Oklahoma felt it would be important to point teachers to specific examples of ways that students could make observations about plants and animals, sort of in their own backyard, not necessarily in an aquarium. The clarity comes in because teachers were sharing with us when they read that students should explore different habitats around their school, aquariums, and neighborhoods. They didn't quite understand what was meant by habitats. So now it's explicit that the habitats are things such as a neighborhood park or ponds and the school playground. So in that way, there are several changes related to clarification statements that create more relevance for Oklahoma students and clarity for teachers. Upon approval of the standards, as I mentioned, we'll begin the implementation support for school districts and teachers. And one of the ways that we now are able to support teachers and school districts deeply with any shifts or changes in standards is through our curriculum frameworks. You may have heard about these, but the curriculum frameworks are a set of resources that are developed by Oklahoma teachers. We work with teachers, 25 to 30 teachers per discipline every year to develop curriculum frameworks. And the role they play, these resources, they help teachers better understand the intent of the standards. They might give teachers ideas about what student actions are occurring with different levels of proficiency and what ways that teachers can support students with differentiated learning or different levels of proficiency. So we'll begin the work upon adoption of the standards in bringing science educators from Oklahoma together to revise those science curriculum frameworks. That concludes everything I wanted to share with you. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
And again, the focus being on ensuring that our students are college and career ready. That's a phrase that is tossed around a lot in meetings or in working groups or boards or commissions. But it's essential, and this is where the rubber meets the road, where we have that blueprint of what is important to know and when it's important to know it, and the maintaining of that focus on STEM skills is embedded throughout these standards. It does increase the clarity, of course, and it ensures that proper building blocks for students so that we've got that foundation, which we want them ready to be able to move straight into STEM-related careers and fields or in post-secondary studies to be able to meet that aim. So again, pre-K, you'll see, is also part of this, and it is articulated all the way through vertically with increased clarity. And so we do thank the team, Tiffany and those in the room who helped do this work over a period of a year. But I know as these cycles are on six-year cycles, you've been collecting a lot of the input over that time. And that heavy lift was in 14, and these adjustments are warranted and needed, but we really do want our kids to be challenged and to have rigorous standards. And so this is what led the thinking to create where we are today. Thank you.
Yes.
I just, again, probably another comment, just as far as the importance, I think, of emphasizing the pre-K and kindergarten. I think so often, you know, pre-K, the focus is much more on reading, which is obviously very important and kind of math foundation, but I love that we're saying that early foundations in science is really critical. To that end, I know you talked about the frameworks. Do you also plan to put together, I know math and English have the parent guidelines mm-hmm. documents. Will you have one for science as well?
Yes, those are actually already created, but okay. We will take a look if there are any revisions to the standards that would impact those family guides, then we would modify those as well.
I would just recommend everybody, if you haven't already seen them, I mean, for someone who has young kids to be able, you know, it's a guideline of how parents can kind of help at home make sure that your kids are learning the standards, and it's really kind of easy to understand, and so those have been great.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, other questions or discussion?
Well, I definitely want to thank you and the team and everyone involved, and I know that it was an effort that brought educators from across the state to have this work completed. So we're very grateful. And in reading all of the public comments, did you at all get any pushback in any way? I know that this has just taken quite some time, but I didn't see any extra additional pushback on any way. Did you feel
that?
No, we
really did not. You probably saw some comments related to the layout. So the layout of the standards before you today are modified a little bit from even the public comment. Teachers are very concerned about the layout of the standards. It was the biggest feedback we got over the last 6 years, was to change the layout and make it more teacher-friendly. We also received a public comment, which you may have seen, related to the kindergarten standards, I believe because people were so fond of the pre-K standards that were created. Actually, I know that to be the case through the focus groups that we held. So kindergarten teachers wanted us to revise the kindergarten standards to reflect more of that play-based language that was in pre-K, which was easy to do because the standards were set up to be play-based. And so we just showcased in the clarification statements how that could come about. We did get a few questions related to the movement of standards in middle school, and so we held a few focus groups to help middle school teachers think that through and provide them some of the rationale that I showcased today, and that made sense to them once they better understood the rationale.
What are you doing? What will be the implementation of the standards and kind of helping seventh grade teachers, you know, to further your example, to know that this is now a shift, that they'll be teaching all of this in seventh grade versus sixth, and how will you roll it out to teachers across the state?
So we will support school districts and teachers thinking about an implementation plan for those shifts in the middle school in a couple of ways. One, we'll develop a guidance document that helps them think through how they might and when they might begin to make those shifts for their grade levels. For example, eighth grade, we would recommend next year that they continue to teach aligned to the 2014 standards because we'll have a an appropriate timeline for implementation for teachers to make those shifts. We will also work to hold several workshops this summer and in the fall to provide middle school teachers in particular opportunities to perhaps learn new science content that they haven't been teaching and allow them to work with other veteran science teachers to think about the instruction that they're going to enact over the next couple of years. The other areas in the standards, with the exception of new pre-K standards, had slight adjustments. So we will work with school districts and teachers to think about perhaps how clarification statements might have changed to be more relevant to the lives of students. But we'll spend a significant portion of our support and implementation support for that middle school grade band because of those placement changes.
Very good. Is there a motion?
I'd make a motion to approve the proposed academic standards for science.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion or comments? All right. Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Abstain.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, thank you. And that motion carries. Congratulations.
One last comment. We do have members of the writing team in the room.
Okay.
Leanne Jimenez from TU, Maudine Wakefield from Mustang, and I think you've met everyone else, but I just want to thank them for the numerous hours that they spent putting into this work and really representing the teachers of Oklahoma. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. And thank you for all of the tireless work and hours you've given. Appreciate your service. All right, thank you very much. All right, board members, let's now turn our attention to the final item on number 7, which we'll ask Levi Patrick, the Assistant Executive Director for Office of Curriculum and Instruction, to present to you regarding a field of study for biomedical sciences at Pioneer Technology Center.
Fantastic. Good morning, honorable board members and Superintendent Hoffmeister. My name is Levi Patrick, and I have the pleasure each year of bringing forward proposals from career technology centers who are currently offering academy services to juniors and seniors in the areas of biomedical sciences, computer science, biotechnology, and pre-engineering. And they, by law, are required to pursue your approval to offer those same academy services to sophomores. And when they request that approval and permission to do so, they present to us a series of documents that help us to understand whether or not they are meeting our expectations for the learning experiences that we would hope that those sophomores receive. So in your packet, I believe you have a memorandum that describes our review process and kind of the statutory authority that we have in that regard, and a document that provides a summary of our findings. There are three particular areas that we review and give attention to, and that is the extent to which the courses within that academy address necessary and appropriate content. And in the case of the Pioneer Technology Center's application for biomedical sciences, we found that to be a sufficient coverage of the necessary content areas. In the second area, we ensure that there is rigorous instruction that ensures a high level of expectations for all students. And in that regard, we review course syllabi, course descriptions, and ensure that the teacher is properly prepared to guarantee that expectation. And again, Pioneer Technology Center has, in our review, received a sufficient rating for that. And the final area is that we ensure that there is going to be a substantial application of learning, which is really the core differentiation of these focus fields of studies that are emphasizing these career fields. And we recognize all of the sending districts for the Pioneer Technology Center have a formal joint agreement between their school and their school board that has approved this this focus field of study as something they want to undertake for their students and that has proper application. And again, that for us in a review process is deemed sufficient. So based on our review and the connections that we've had with the career technology leaders at the Oklahoma Department of Career Technology, we would like to recommend to you that this application be approved. And if you have questions, I would be happy to respond.
I do have a question. It says on here just Pioneer. Are they the only ones requesting
yes,
to
ma'am.
Have this? So they're the only ones in the state that are going to be providing.
Oh, so a point of clarification. I have a data point for you in that regard. So we have 26 biomedical academies across the state. And I believe the number is that 11 of those have received this special permission to allow sophomores to enter into those academies. So this is a per institution request and approval process that has to go before the board. So this is the only one this year requesting that new approval for sophomores.
Do you know of the 26, are any in this area? I mean, as far as in the Ponca City?
No. So they have an existing biomedical academy.
Yeah.
They're at that Career Technology Center, but this would be the only biomedical academy, and it's their first application to receive sophomores.
Yeah.
Schools are not sending to another Career Technology Center.
Okay. I just didn't know if there was another career tech in that kind of region that had a biosciences.
Perhaps in the region, and I would have to, I have a very, very detailed map here that I could perhaps better answer the question. But I suspect the answer, though, for the students in the districts who are sending districts, they do not have access otherwise.
Okay. Okay. I had another question.
Sure.
I don't know if anyone from Pioneer is here, because I feel like it's more a question for them.
Yes, we do, I believe, have a guest from Pioneer Technology Center. Would you like to
invite them? Sure, or you might know the answer. Okay. But I just kind of wondered why biomedical, and I know this is just, like, they've had it. Like, I don't know if it ties to their economy, if this is a specific need that they have in their community to have additional, you know, kind of workers in this field.
Yeah, I see. So would you like to respond to that question? Could you come up and introduce yourself, if that's okay?
All right, thank you.
Hello, I'm Kendra Keelan from Pioneer Technology Center. And we have some industry partners that would benefit from us having more STEM-related industries, such as Phillips 66. As one example. We also have other labs, our hospitals, and those types of industry. Does that answer you?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Thank you.
And if I could add, thank you very much. And if I could add a point of clarification, our Career Technology Centers engage with their communities extensively, and each year essentially have the opportunity to revise their course offerings to ensure that it is preparing students to meet the demands of their local economies.
I have one more question. I'm sorry. Sure. Levi's used to this.
Yes. Thank you.
How does this at all reflect backwards as far as you, I know you're in charge of the programs of excellence.
Mm-hmm.
So do technology centers work kind of backwards to help their high schools as far as develops STEM as a program of excellence?
And yeah.
Is there any tie there?
Well, fantastic question, Ms. Moniz. So one of the key, I think, opportunities that our career technology centers provide, especially as it relates to these academies, is the expanded access to advanced math and science coursework. So many of our schools make difficult decisions about their teacher workforce and their course placement. And as I'm sure you all know, when you have a high school teacher and you're making decisions about which five or six preps they will have, oftentimes you are filling in the core responsibilities for graduation requirements and leaving out perhaps some of the advanced course offerings that those students might want access to. So very often, career technology centers provide that additional support for the advanced coursework. And we would expect in our programs of excellence for mathematics that increasingly our students have access to the full breadth of those pathways for advanced math and science courses.
Thanks.
It's important to note that Oklahoma has among the best career tech education in the state, in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Brian and I have the privilege of serving on the Career Tech Board, and so we get a lot of this information and really what's kind of coming down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So we are very grateful to see that biomedical sciences is definitely something that is being lifted up, but also I would love to be able to see the opportunity for other technology centers to also bring this on.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a way that we can really work collaboratively to make that happen, I think that would be an outstanding thing or great work that we need to start doing.
I'm with you. Very good.
Excellent. All right, then is there a motion?
I make a motion.
All right, we have a motion from Mr. Bobek and a second from Ms. Moniz. Okay, please call the roll.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, that motion carries. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, item 8. We'll ask to speak, turn your attention, excuse me, to Lori Murphy, Assistant General Counsel, to discuss rules.
Good morning, honorable members of the board. I want to start with a general recommendation that we have a science experiment at every board meeting. Like, that would be great. Tiffany can provide that. If you will turn your attention, please, to agenda item 8A1. This is the first of two proposed rule changes. And this first is on the rule covering requirements for renewal or reissuance of teaching certificates. So if an individual is denied for renewal currently, the rule has not historically provided that there is a process to appeal that determination. So this new proposed section adds due process procedures that are the same procedures that apply if an individual's teaching certificate is revoked or proposed for revocation. So currently, you could apply for a renewal certificate, and that would be denied without an appeal opportunity. This builds that into the rule. So following public comment, we have made a couple of language adjustments where there is now a clarification in the proposed language to ensure that an educator's employing school district is informed, that the superintendent of that district where our records show they are currently or were last employed is also notified if their certificate is denied for renewal. And we do not have further language changes recommended based on public comment, but we wanted to note those for you, what's reflected in your packet. Any questions about that rule change? Okay, there is another proposed set of amendments to the teacher and leader effectiveness evaluation system rules. This is a required rule update due to changes in the TLE statute. So as you know, the TLE system is Oklahoma's teacher evaluation and individualized professional development system. It requires periodic observations of teachers and evaluations of their performance, and it includes a five-tier rating system. So one of the changes in law, which has to be reflected in this rule, is that now if you are a career teacher, which means you've essentially taught 3 years in the same district and received adequate ratings, then if you receive a superior or highly effective rating, one of the top two, you only need to be evaluated every 3 years. So the rule is now reflecting that statutory change. And also updating with a clarification that the time periods when for career teachers and probationary teachers those observations are required is now stated in the rule to save districts and teachers from having to tease that out of the statute. And finally, there is a new subsection proposed on the qualitative components rule. And what this provides is a clear statement and codification of the existing requirements for the qualitative report that districts have to submit every year. And this clarifies what is required for that report, which is the district's evaluation model to be reported, whether they're using Marzano or Tulsa model. The professional learning focus topic and status for each certified educator must be included on that annual report. And finally, the certificate number of each educator evaluated and the certificate number of their evaluator get included on that report. So those are some updates to the TLE rules in general that we've had to make due to changes in statute. Do you have any questions about those? Yes.
Can you talk about on D1 of the second rule, it talks about that the district superintendent is exempted?
Yes.
Can you explain why that is?
Yes, the reason for that, there's a statement in the rule that the district superintendent is exempt from the procedure of annual development of professional focus goals, and that is because under the TLE system in general, district superintendents are not part of that system proper, but are evaluated by the district school board. So a school board sets the evaluation criteria for a district superintendent and performs those evaluations. So that's the reason that there is a distinction in rule that although this applies to all other certified teachers and administrators in the district, the superintendent is not by statute part of that process.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on that adjustment? Okay, that is all the proposed rule changes for this month.
Okay. Do we need to vote on those separately?
You can, board members, you can vote on these separately or take them collectively.
Okay, is there a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve both.
Both.
Rules.
All right.
Second.
All right. Any comments or questions? Okay, Seeing none, please call the roll.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Ms. Menes?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy. Now, General Counsel Brad Clark will discuss with you the item for your consideration, 8B.
Superintendent, honorable board members, I guess good morning still. Everyone was crowded here. I think it's awesome. You know, we had Brooke earlier, the standards, and now we get to the lawyers and the room clears. It shows where the, but I appreciate the remaining for the eighth and ninth innings here. I do have a presentation this morning on the current status and operations of two school districts, those being Keys Public Schools and Albion Public Schools. Board members, you have the packet in front of you. There is a map representing the geography where Keys and Albion are located. Keys is located in Cimarron County. The neighboring school districts would be Boys City and Yarborough. So if you want to take a moment, look at that. Familiarize yourself. You may already know where we're talking about. So I mentioned the current operations and status of the school districts. I thought it was important to first start with the academic portion. So a quick look here at the 2018-2019 school report card. You can see both elementary level and high schools. A lot of no grades reflected. Taking what Tiffany mentioned earlier, I'm learning that this is a phenomenon and that there's a reason for this. I can explain that. The reason being that the school district simply does not have the minimum number of students to have a grade reflected. That's due to student privacy and confidentiality protections that are in place. That number is 10, often referred to around here in other education circles as the N size. The district, as I said, just does not have the number of students to receive a grade in each indicator. So let's talk about that for a moment. The number of kids, the student enrollment. 2015, Keys Public Schools K through 12 had 83 students. 2 years later, we dropped to 55. 2 years after that, last year, Keys Public Schools, 12 grade levels offered 13 students. 2 days ago, Keys has 9 students, K through 12. This is a dramatic decline, loss of student enrollment. The 9 students, I understand there are 5 at the elementary school site and 4 in the high school.
Okay.
So then we talk about accreditation standards. I should mention,
Mr. Clark, do we know why there has been such a drastic decline?
My understanding is that students have simply transferred out of Keys Public Schools over the few years, and so the students who are there are those who have not transferred out.
Okay.
I could also mention that the entire district has co-opted with other neighboring districts for extracurricular activities, sports, ag, so on. The Keys Public Schools does not run any transportation routes. So, like I said, the kids have simply left.
Is it safe to assume that there's a superintendent at this public school or at Keys Public School?
I'm sorry, is it safe to assume?
For Keys
is there
Public
a superintendent?
There is, yeah. So I think last summer when I was up here, there may not have been a superintendent administration in place at a certain school district. But yes, at Keys, certainly there is a superintendent in place, and they co-op with another school district to share the services of that superintendent.
Okay.
Yep. So looking at the accreditation statutes and rules that are in place, and by the way, you see all these 70 OS references here. It's evidently why I paid $150,000 for law school to put those on a PowerPoint. Accreditation standards, the legislature set these up years ago and determined that through, by and through this body, this board, we want to ensure there are certain standards, certain compliance requirements that are in place to meet the needs of all students, to provide equitable opportunities for an excellent education for all kids, and also to ensure that taxpayer dollars are efficiently used. And by doing that, we have laws and regulations. There's a reference there at the bottom right on school boards, administration, finances, and personnel, generally speaking. I will say that these are not just compliance. It's not a compliance-driven thing only, but it's there at the top. What is the goal? I heard Mr. Bollenbach, you mentioned earlier the goal. The goal is to meet the needs of all students, and then the two others there. So the current accreditation status can be divided into five different categories. The first is accredited with no deficiencies. Accredited with deficiencies follows that. Probably self-explanatory on those two. The third is accredited with warning. That is where a school fails to meet one or more standards, and the failure to do so seriously detracts from the educational program. Below that is accredited with probation. That is essentially the failure to correct those deficiencies over a period of time. And then below that is non-accredited. If there is non-accreditation, the school site fails to exist. And these are not linear. And so it doesn't mean that you have to go in progressive order up or down. This body has that authority to make that determination. So talking about keys, I'm going to back up and talk about state requirements first. State law requires that students have 23 completed credits or their equivalent in competencies in order to graduate from a public school or accredited school in Oklahoma. State, through regulations, also requires that school districts offer 38 units or their equivalent to be offered to students. Okay, 23 you have to complete to graduate, have to offer 38. It's my belief as I stand here this morning, Keyes offers 23. So let's think about that for a moment. Kids have to have 23 completed to graduate. And this particular school district offers that minimal number. Have to offer 38. Currently, they're only offering 23. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, the district has received deficiencies in 2018 and 2019. Their current accreditation status is accredited with warning, and that's as a result, at least as a result of the not offering the 38 required. I said at least as a result of, there are other components that may factor in. If we look across programmatic areas within the agency and then the offerings in schools, I can tell you that in 2018, Keyes had a special education complaint filed. That complaint was filed under the IDEA, or Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The result of that was that the district was non-compliant with IDEA. As of last night, the district continues to be out of compliance with IDEA. Different reason, okay? But pursuant to federal regulations, a student must be reevaluated at least once every 3 years, and that is not happening. Alternative education, that's, I know that you guys are all well aware of this, but these are our at-risk students. We're talking about civil rights here in these two areas. 2017-18 report on alternative education listed this district as non-compliant or minimally compliant in 14 different areas. The next year, it nearly doubled to 25. So it's listed as conclusion, I think, in summary. We've seen an 84% drop in enrollment in about 4 years, from 83 to 9 across 12 grades. Noncompliance in the course offerings, minimal number of offerings that have to be completed to graduate. So I'm not standing here saying that kids are not able to graduate. That's a different statement. But it's the minimal offerings and less than what is required. I think the trajectory, if you want to predict, is that the offerings are going to drop. We've seen that happen. And then in civil rights, just to summarize, we're talking about educationally disadvantaged students. And I'm not, that's not my terminology, that's in federal law, which includes special education, students with disabilities, and alternative education. And so the next one is on annexation. You may recall from last summer, three situations where this board must consider mandatory annexation. If a school district is academically at risk, district is non-accredited, or the district fails to open or maintain school. I will submit to you today that I think all three of these are applicable in this situation. I will further submit to you that the district superintendent is well aware of, and I believe she believes that the district should close. In fact, I'll go one step further. It's my understanding that the board members have discussed this, but they do not want to make this decision. They would rather this body make that decision. So I'm here this morning making this first part of the presentation. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, is anyone with keys, public
yeah,
schools here?
Yeah, that was one of the first questions.
I don't believe so.
Okay. I don't interrupt, but what are obviously some of the other students have gone to other districts. The remaining nine, what does that look like? Is it
where would they potentially go?
Geographically, where are yes, sir.
Yeah, I think Boys City or Yarborough. Boys City is to the west, and Yarborough is to the east.
Proximity, I mean.
Boys City, I believe, is 16.9 miles.
Okay.
And Yarborough is, I actually think Yarborough is probably closer.
Okay.
Are they aware this is happening, that this conversation
those
is being
had
today?
Those are the two districts, do they know?
I believe they are. Let me back up.
Had they been notified?
Keys or the other two?
No, the other two, Boise City and the other one.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, and we'll follow here in just a moment with that's part of the request. But was your question whether Keys has been notified? Yes.
Does Keys have a principal and support staff, and how many teachers do they have? Do we know?
I may ask. I see Ryan standing in the hallway. I don't have that answer as I stand here, but he might. If not, we can certainly get it.
I can get it. I just need a minute.
Okay. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Yep. So the recommendation this morning, they're currently accredited with warning. The recommendation is to strike that and accredit with probation. In conjunction with that, would request that we move forward with officially notifying the district that effective June 30th, annexation would be considered by this body as early as next month. If that were to happen, the district would have access to the consolidation fund, so they would receive additional funds as a result of the annexation or consolidation, whichever. In this case, it would be annexation. And then the employees who were not retained would be eligible for severance. So I'll pause there on Keys if there are any questions.
The reason you're recommending these steps is just so they can finish out this as seamlessly as they can this semester, I assume. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Every effort is made to not affect students in a negative manner.
Yeah, sure.
Does that also give time either to come and present why they would oppose it to this board. It also would give the community time to circle the wagon, so to speak, if they wanted to, and come up with some alternative themselves.
Yes, sir. Appreciate that. As a part of the official notice, they have a minimum of 15 days to request an opportunity to appear before this board and address any opposition, support, whatever the case may be, could be in between, address any noncompliance and further. But this morning, that official notice has not taken place, but the informal conversation has.
If this body recommends annexation, let's say at the next board meeting, is it up to those nine students and families? We don't say you have to annex with this district. It's ultimately up to them to decide which way they would go.
I think I'm going to answer that in two ways. There can be a recommendation as we collectively look at how far, you know, different factors of neighboring school districts. I think we did that in earlier situations as well. But I think we would want to look at factors such as where the kids want to go, where the kids have gone mm-hmm. on prior occasions, whether through transfer or moving, or both.
Mr. Clark, I have that information for you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Hello again. I believe the question was, do they have a superintendent and do they have a principal? And they do. It is the same person, Ms. Frieda Burgess, that is filling and serving in both roles.
And do you know how many teachers they have on staff?
Yes. I do. They have four in the elementary. They have three at the high school.
So
Ms. Burgess being one of those.
Seven teachers, nine kids.
That's amazing. Teacher
triple hatting.
Okay.
Wow. Now, Brad, you mentioned that, started your statement that this was kind of a phenomenon. Was there a way to be able to see the writing on the wall and that this was coming? And I understand that this started back in 2015 when you started to notice that there were only 83 students, almost 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And nine now.
May
Do
I have
you,
to ask?
Is there a way, and I guess it kind of speaks to a larger issue, or if, can we look at what other districts are truly going through this and really finding ways to be able to help instead of waiting 5 years to where now we're seeing that, okay, we've got to annex or helping them earlier on?
Yep, absolutely. Completely with you on that. And we do. We have a very good working relationship in this agency and at the board level with districts. Constant communication with them. I said that the superintendent at Keys is a co-op superintendent, shared services, and she has informed individuals that are employed here along the way of, hey, we're seeing this. Hey, our transportation routes, we don't run any buses, things of that nature. When you see the enrollment drop that significantly, 84% in 4 years, and then the non-compliance areas, you know, putting those all together, I think that's the reason that I'm up here this morning making these recommendations. We try to, you know, work with the districts, to your point, and communicate and understand where they may be. They may see an increase in enrollment going forward. There may be a reason for certain situations they find themselves in. But over time, we're not seeing anything other than a significant, dramatic decrease.
So right now, currently in statute, there isn't a minimum of student body that requires for this body to keep accreditation.
Correct.
So, which tells me that if this school with nine students was able to meet and be accredited, we would have a school district with only 9 students would continue moving forward.
It's possible. Although, I'm not sure that it would meet the third criteria here. It's possible, but I don't think it's likely that the district would be able to maintain and provide financial support for the students.
Okay. And where I'm going with this is really seeing, being good stewards of our resources for every student, for every district, that really we should be looking at, are we putting these funds and this money towards what other districts that may just have 20 or 30? I'm just kind of opening up the conversation and really looking at it on a long term to where we can help these districts be successful, yeah. Yep. Whether by annexing or even if they are meeting these being accredited, but really finding that it's possible if there's a district with 25, that it is in the best interest of those students to be able to annex. I'm just kind of...
Yeah, I'll try to answer it in a number of ways. Some of our smallest schools have magnificent course offerings, magnificent programs, and just knock it out of the park. Tiffany mentioned Frederick earlier for the writing committee for the standards. In conversations and seeing things that I've learned, it's almost the mecca of innovation in Frederick and the things they're doing there. And you can hear it in the community, the voices. And so I don't know that I would personally just look at 10 students to 20 students or 40 or whatever the number may be. But let's look at a more comprehensive approach, which I actually think is a good segue into accreditation, mm-hmm. with what we're doing with Ryan. And it's a more holistic view on school operations and status that doesn't just look at security drills. It's a comprehensive look at audits. And it may include enrollment. It may include other factors in there. And so I think to have these conversations, to be fully informed, we have to look at everything.
Thank you.
All right. So just moving to Albion real quick. Albion is located in Pushmataha County. I heard southeast. Yeah, that's right. No, that's great. Southeastern Oklahoma, neighboring school districts, I believe Tuskahoma, Neshoba, and Tallahena would be three that I'm familiar with. Just keeping the pattern, the flow here for the conversation the same as with Keys, the Oklahoma School Report Card starting with academics, the 2018-19 School Report Card for Albion reflected the following indicator grades. And just to explain a little bit about this report card, Keys K through 12. So they had two report cards for sites, right? Albion is a K through 8. So they have one report card. So I'm going to stop here and just summarize where this is going on the next few slides. If you look at Albion, over the last few years, we see a problem with the financial situation in that district. The problems, just to list a few, two of the last 3 years they have exceeded their appropriations. They have exceeded the allowable administrative costs, and we'll talk about these in more detail here in a moment. Their last two audits have shown findings, and we'll discuss those in detail. And then this board last month, you might recall, were presented with a waiver request as a result of Albion's non-compliance with the Oklahoma Cost Accounting System. The board denied that request, and so a monetary penalty has been, the district has been notified, and that will be assessed. Let's talk about exceeding appropriations for a moment. Statutory references, I think, are important in all contexts, but particularly here. Title 70, Section 5-157 identifies what's on this slide, that a school district has to have a positive fund balance at the end of each school year. And if not, the consequences are as follows. The individual who is responsible for incurring the obligation that put them in a negative balance is required to forfeit their office. That individual is also subject to civil and criminal penalties and revocation of a certificate. The statute also provides that the individual is to become personally responsible for those obligations. So we may be talking about the superintendent, we could be talking about the treasurer, we could be talking about the encumbrance clerk. I think we're still gathering facts as we're here this morning. Albion 2018 ended up in a negative fund balance of $3,500. I do have a copy of the letter they submitted when presented with why did this happen? What caused this? And the letter reads and stated December 11th, 2018, says, due to extenuating circumstances and the abandonment at the last minute by the former encumbrance clerk, we had a closing negative balance. Declining enrollment over the previous years have drastically reduced our revenues. So we see indications, Ms. Hernandez, to your point, maybe one factor that we're talking about here. That's one for exceeding appropriations. Two, the administrative cost. Statute provides in part a district with an average daily attendance or ADA of 500 or less may not have more than 8% of its total expenditures on administrative costs. And I did not include, because it's not applicable here, there's a scale in that statute. It drops down to 7% if you have, I think it's 1,500, and then it goes to 5%, excuse me, if you have a higher threshold of ADA. 2019, Albion has been assessed financial penalty, the amount reflected there at $38,000. School audits, every school year, every public school district is required to have an annual audit. It's a financial and compliance audit of all funds in the district. Those school auditors are approved by the state auditor's office. The copies of all audits are on the state auditor's website. If you wanted to go find one of these audits for FY 2017, the findings for Albion were noted as follows. They did not see evidence of any contracts for employees. The payroll was not supported by a contract. That would be critical to have that in place. Additionally, the activity fund purchase orders were dated after the invoice date. And then fast forward the next year, saw the same finding about the activity fund invoices, or the purchase orders, excuse me. And then in FY 18, as I mentioned a moment ago, the district exceeded their appropriations. I suspect the same finding is going to occur once a copy of the current year audit comes in. 2018, the exceeding appropriations, I said, was about $3,000, provided the district's explanation. The following year, I don't know that it would be the abandonment at the last minute by the former encumbrance clerk that led to a penalty, exceeding the appropriation by $170,000. Noncompliance with OCAS, Oklahoma Cost Accounting System, as I mentioned earlier. The statute provides very plainly that by September 1st of each year, all schools must report the actual income and expenditures within that school district. That's done through the OCAS office here at the agency. Those reports are on the transparency index on the website. Failure to report and failure to operate pursuant to that system, you get a reduction in state aid funds. That reduction starts at the sliding scale. The first month, it's a 1% of state aid allocation. Second month, 2%, third month 3%, and then up to 5% every month after the fifth. Federal programs, I believe Federal Programs Office and the agency recently conducted an on-site review at Albion and found that there were no apparent evidentiary documents of time and effort records. Remember, we saw the audits that did not show any contracts along with payroll, and then we see that there was evidently at the time no evidence of the time and effort records. We had an individual paraprofessional that did not have the proper credentials to be in the classroom with special needs kids. And then an observation that was reflected in the report relates to the facility, the school site. It's unacceptable. Poor physical state, broken glass windows and doors. The storm cellar was wide open with approximately 3 inches of standing water. Again, we look at the comprehensive, holistic look. So recommendation's a little different here. The recommendation is to accredit today with probation. And in combination with that, request that the OSD schedule an on-site review. So not just federal programs, but let's talk about OCAS and the financial piece of it. The REOs go out at the same time, review all records, see if we can find those contracts, see if we can find the payroll supporting documents, look at the activities, operations, and the facility review. And then, in the meantime, between now and, let's say, the next board meeting, send any...
Wow.
I had to do the same thing.
24th Street.
That's awesome.
Road trip. Let's go.
That is Exhibit A of how fast we work around here. That was great. So again, send any notifications that are deemed appropriate relating to findings, corrective action, recommendations leading up to the next State Board of Education meeting. And then, particularly with the exceeding of appropriations, request that we move forward with notifying appropriate local law enforcement for whatever action they may deem appropriate. I'm happy to answer any questions on that.
How many students currently did you say?
I believe in 2018 it was 45 to 50, and I believe they've gone up mid-50s, I think.
And how close is the nearest school?
I'm sorry, right, 53 students. Nearest school, I think it's, as they say, as the crow flies, a few miles, but it may take a little longer than that. But there are three, you can see on the map reflected there, it's a few miles.
What would be the timeline with the, if the probation was done, where the reports would come back to this body on their findings from SDE?
Well, we just heard that we're on our way to Albion.
Yeah, exactly.
And so
next month.
In all seriousness, the goal would be to have the report next month, okay, but start right away with scheduling that on-site review.
No, I'd make a motion to follow the recommendations as set forth by Mr. Clark on both Keys and Albion.
Second.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All right, please call the roll.
Ms.
Hernandez.
Aye. Mr. Bowenbach.
Aye.
Ms. Williams-Bradley.
Aye.
Mr. Bobek.
Aye.
Ms. Mennies.
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister.
Aye. All right, motion carries. Thank you.
All right, board members, I will remain here. Looks like the next few items, we would recommend that the board authorize convening an executive session for the reasons identified on the agenda.
I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
All right, please call the roll.
Ms. Mennies?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Nandis?
Aye.
Superintendent.
Aye. All right. Okay, we're moving into executive session now. Well, we will vote to come out of executive session. Is there a...
I'll make a motion to come out of the executive session.
Second.
Okay, please call the roll.
Mr. Nandis?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Mennies?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, we are out of executive session. Please let our the record show no decisions or votes were made in executive session. Now, as we look at the agenda, is there a motion on item C? This would be 8C. Oh, I'm sorry. Is that correct? Yes, this is on the discussion and possible action on the hearing officer's proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and orders on the teaching certificate and certificate number of Pete Bush.
I'll make a motion that the board accept the hearing officer's proposed finding of fact, conclusion of law, and orders regarding the teaching certificate of Mr. Pete Bush, and also authorize the board of, or the department to issue a public censure to Mr. Bush.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions? All right. Please call the roll.
Ms. Mennies?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right. That motion carries. Now, is there another motion with regard to yes, on 8D.
I will make a motion to, is it revoke or suspend? For Brewer. Suspend the certificate of Nolan Brewer.
Second.
All right. And that would be, go ahead and call the roll on that individual.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Mennies?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, that motion carries. Is there another motion?
Yes, ma'am. I make a motion that we suspend the teaching certificate of Mr. Trent Winters and additionally request the OOLAGA superintendent and board members to appear before this body in our March meeting.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. Any further discussion or comments? Okay, please call the roll.
Ms. Mennies?
Aye.
Mr. Bobek?
Aye.
Ms. Williams Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Ballenbach?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that motion carries as well. Is there any other motion? All right, any new business, item 9? Okay, I do not see any. All in favor of adjournment. First, is there a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Go. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign. And I do not hear that, so we are adjourned. Thank you. Just in time.
Gotta get on it.
Good luck.